Fourth and final hour on this rainy Monday to start off the week. Doesn't feel like a rainy day when you consider what happened in this market. Predators get a big come-from-behind victory Saturday afternoon down in Dallas against the Stars. The Vols rip apart Kentucky in Knoxville. Vanderbilt almost pulled off the win in Missouri. By the way, they were a 6, depending on where you look, anywhere from a 16 to 17-point underdog against Missouri and could have won the game.
Probably
should have won the game.
I thought for a second you were going to say the only place it's raining today is on West End.
Yeah.
Based off of the weekend.
Yeah. Probably like a cloud just hanging
cloud
over
hanging.
It. Yeah. And our next guest will probably weigh in on this too because he took them in underdogs. He probably would have liked to have that. I think in our underdog pick,
it was a good pick.
17.
It was a good pick.
And then, of course, the Titans take care of business at Nissan Stadium. We say hello to former Titans wide receiver and now part of our morning drive here on 102.5 The Game, D-Mace, Derek Mason. Derek, what's up?
Nothing much. Yeah, that's 2 weeks in a row where a team has had a nice lead and managed to squander it away. A&M last week, and I'm just talking about in regards to silly underdogs. A&M last week and now Vandy. And this is, what, the third time now where Vandy has had a lead and of more than 10 points and have managed to squander it away and haven't been able to finish games.
Yeah, they were up 21-3 against Florida at home. What was the other one?
What was it? This past game, and I thought it was another one. They were up and ended up losing.
Well, they're in the Notre Dame game right to the end.
Yeah, they were in the Notre Dame game, the Florida game, the Missouri game. So I guess it was just two games where they had an opportunity to pull out a victory and would have, you know, changed the narrative of Vanderbilt football this season. But they didn't do it. And they walk away with another close defeat.
It wasn't a lead, but the Kentucky game they were in right down
yeah,
to the
Kentucky
end, too.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
There's several games out there this year where you just say, gosh, if Vanderbilt could finish,
mm-hmm.
how different this year could be.
And that's,
yeah, you're right, Tom.
And that's what the Titans are doing. They're finishing. They are finishing the job. And they did it in Dallas. They came out in the second half and close the deal. They did it yesterday where I said this morning, all day on the show today, Derek, I kept waiting for that wave. I kept waiting for the Patriots comeback. I kept going, okay. I hearken back to our conversation. Remember when MTSU, I hate to bring this up as the example, when MTSU upset Michigan State, one of the biggest upsets in NCAA tournament history, and I kept waiting for the Spartans to come back. I kept waiting for that wave. When does this 14-2 run happen? It never happened. And, of course, it never happened yesterday, which is a real credit to the Titans.
Yeah, it is. The Titans went it, you know, at home. They came out and they took care of business. You know, you were kind of leery or kind of unsettled because knowing what they've done in prior games where they won two games and then end up, you know, squandering away a victory against a team they should beat, whether, you know, Buffalo or Miami. But this game, they came in and they took full advantage, I think, of a team that for the first time I thought New England looked old and slow. Maybe because of their injuries. And when I say that, I'm not saying that, you know, it's done for New England. The dynasty is over. I'm not saying that because they've done this before where they've gotten blown out and they find themselves in the Super Bowl either winning or losing on the last, you know, possession. But I did see a team that I think couldn't wait to get into the bye week. And I saw another team in the Titans that looked as if they were full of energy and they were up for the challenge and taking on a team that many consider, one of the top two or three teams in the National Football League. So they did it 3 or 4 weeks ago to Philadelphia, and now they've done it to New England.
What do you think is the right target amount for Corey Davis moving forward? What do you think they should have in their game plan week in and week out the rest of the season for Corey Davis? What's fair and realistic?
I think, you know, realistically and fair, it's going to have to be double-digit targets every game from here on out. Now, you know, weather might dictate how many targets he gets, or, you know, how a defense is playing might dictate that, but they should come into the game because this is the fifth pick in the NFL draft 2 years ago. So he should be looking at double digits. And when I say double digits, I'm talking 12 to 15 times a game. That's what realistically he should be expecting each and every game. And it will only help Jonnu Smith, who's coming on now, and only help Tajay Sharpe and Taywan Taylor and Jennings, who made big plays as well, and Batson as well. So, but the game plan from a passing standpoint should be built around Corey Davis.
Former Titans receiver Derek Mason joining us here on 102.5 The Game. Derek, the first seven games of the season, the Titans scored seven offensive touchdowns. They scored eight offensive touchdowns in eight quarters in the last 7 days. What has gotten into the offense that has made such a drastic difference here since the bye week?
Two things. I think one is the guys are starting to get a little bit more comfortable in the offense because of, you know, this new NFL where, you know, you can't spend as much time together in off season. Now it's taken offenses a little while to get adjusted to new systems, and that's what you've seen. Now, hopefully they can keep it going, but that's what you've seen. That's what you saw the first half of the season, where they were still getting used to the offense. Mariota wasn't just dropping back and letting it rip. He was hesitating some. And when you hesitate in this game, you go from being open to cover very quickly. Now you're starting to see in the last two or three games where Marcus is just, you know, hitting that back step and he's throwing it, play action and he's throwing it. He's not hesitating too much. And I think the most important thing is that guys are catching the ball now. You know, prior to the, I think, Dallas game, we were talking about guys dropping balls, whether it's Jonnu Smith, whether it's Taywan Taylor, or even Corey Davis and Sharp. They were dropping balls. Now those balls that they were dropping, you know, three, 4 games ago, they're catching them, and they're gaining confidence, and Marcus is gaining confidence in them. So now he's not hesitating, and guys are catching the ball now.
Yeah, he's not tentative anymore, and I'm curious if you see this as well, but one of the big things I think that is the difference for the offense is that Mariota looks like a guy who's fully healthy now. He's ditched the protective glove, and it seems like he feels like he can make all the throws, and therefore he is. We always hear people say a great quarterback can throw guys open, D-Mace. I feel like yesterday, and even the Dallas game, we've seen some examples. Cam Batson on the sideline yesterday, Corey Davis in the end zone, even the Jonnu Smith touchdown. You go back to Dallas, Darius Jennings down the middle of the field. I feel like he's thrown balls into windows in these two games that are what the elite quarterbacks do that people have said has been missing in Marcus Mariota's game.
Yeah, it has. You've seen flashes of it where he's thrown it in tight spots or just let it rip and throwing it to an area where he's throwing the receiver open. You've seen it in bits and pieces, but he hasn't done it consistently. What he's doing now is he's consistently throwing those passes, and guys are consistently catching the football. Yes, and it does help when you're, you know, fully healthy. You don't have to worry about wearing a protective glove or worry about your knees or your ankles or anything. You just go out there and play football and let it rip. And as the weeks go on, Marcus is just gaining confidence in his offense. And I guarantee you over the bye week, he and LaFleur sat down and the quarterback's coach sat down and they explained to Marcus, listen, just throw it. Trust what you see in the defense. Trust what you see from your guys and just let it rip. I mean, you're going to throw interceptions, it's fine, but just throw the ball and expect your receivers to go and get it. And that's what Marcus is doing.
The worst performance we've seen from the Titans this year was a 21-0 shutout at home against the Ravens. Since then, Baltimore has failed to win, and there was a report earlier today, Derek, not sure if you saw this, but that John Harbaugh and the Ravens may be nearing a mutual decision to part ways at the end of the season. As someone who knows that organization and knows John Harbaugh very well, what do you think about where that team stands right now and what his future may be in Baltimore?
From what I've heard, you know, it's a mutual decision. It's a mutual split at the end of the season. You know, I don't know what has put them, you know, to what has, you know, made them, you know, want to go in another direction. One reason could be Ozzie Newsome is stepping down at the end of the season, so they're getting a new GM. Maybe the new GM want to go in another direction with the new head coach. He wants to be able to hire his own coach. John was Ozzie's hire, and maybe DaCosta wants to, you know, hire his own coach. You never know, but this team is, I mean, they're still in the hunt for playoff. I think they sit right now at the sixth or seventh spot, just ahead of the Titans, in the playoff picture. So this team is still in the playoff picture. I wonder what's going to happen if indeed this team gets in the playoff and they go on a run. Are you still willing to part ways, with John Harbaugh if he indeed gets his team going in the playoffs? So it'll be interesting to see it. But I know Ozzie's stepping down at the end of the season, and maybe, again, DaCosta wants to go in another direction with his own head coach.
Real quickly, as we wrap this up, Derek, what do you see out of guys that aren't on everybody's radar, like Darius Jennings? I mean, just think about how close he was to this all ending in the game that they could have – in the Philadelphia game. It could end up being the Darius Jennings game, and then where he's at today, and then Cam Batson, who's been kind of in and out, off the team, on the team. Well, he made a big catch. What do you see out of those two guys?
I see guys that are taking full advantage of opportunities that they're given. You know, in this profession, you're only given so many opportunities to show that you can play. And when they call your number, you got to be ready. You can't get ready. You got to be ready. And it seems as if Jennings and Batson, those guys are ready to contribute in any way. And when they get their hands on the ball, they're catching it more than not. So these are guys that are just trying to, you know, make an impact somehow, some way, whether it be special teams or on the offensive side of the ball.
D-Mace, good stuff as always. Appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your rainy day.
All right, fellas, have a good one.
No pool time for you.
Oh, no.
Or yard work with no shirt on. D-Mace, every Monday at 1 o'clock, he joins us. When we come back, I'm going to give you a Titan stat that will blow your mind.
I'm
ready. It's going to blow your mind. This is courtesy of Brian Baldinger.
I'm prepared.
Okay, you ready for it? That'll be on the other side. You're listening to Nashville's Best Sports Talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Adonik, Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman, News Channel 5 alongside. A stat that is going to blow Steve and everybody out there listening. It's going to blow your mind.
I'm prepared to have my head explode.
And I have turned the computer to protect the innocent, just so you can't see.
I have no idea where this is going.
This is courtesy of Brian Baldinger. Okay. This is a pretty cool stat. We've talked about the Titans defense a lot today.
Mm-hmm.
10 times yesterday, the Patriots ran on 1st and 10. 10
yep.
times.
Yep.
Okay. And in those 10 first and 10 runs, how many yards did the Patriots gain?
Not many.
Do we have Jeopardy music?
You're looking for total yards. 10 carries?
No. Yep. 10 times the Patriots ran on 1st and 10 yesterday. How many yards did they accumulate in those 10 tries?
I'm going to say 18 total yards.
Need you to form that in a question.
What is 18 yards?
What is 18 yards? Says Steve Lehman. That is incorrect. That is too high. You must go lower, sir.
Okay. how many yards for 100, please? What is 4 yards?
What is 4 yards? He indeed went lower, but now he's gone too low.
Okay. So I've lost at this point.
Somewhere in between. How about 10?
10 yards. 10 yards on 10 carries. 1 yard per carry.
Yeah. 10 yards on 10 tries.
Impressive defense.
Right? That sums it up a lot.
It does.
Because you know what that's forcing New England to do the rest of the way? Be in bad spots. That's not the way you want to be. That's not a good recipe in the NFL, right? Basically, what that stat tells us is they virtually got nothing done on first and 10.
Right. Playing behind the chains a lot.
Yeah. So pretty cool stat from Brian Baldinger. I also just saw where Adam Schefter tweeted out to go along with my "this is what I know." The Bucks have released their kicker. Chandler Catanzaro, is that how you say his name?
Catanzaro,
whatever. He's gone.
Yep.
Another kicker.
The problem for them is who do you bring in who's going to be any better?
Right. Who are you going to pull right now?
Can Matt Barkley also kick? Pull him off the street?
Honestly, if I'm like Morton Anderson of these guys, I would be like, you know, I think I could come back and do just as well as these guys. I know I just turned 57, but I think I can kick better than these
38
guys.
38 yards and in. I'm money, baby. No.
Well, that is true. Gary Anderson.
Sure.
But then he had the big kick in Baltimore.
Right.
That was the last, was before the Kansas City win last year, the last playoff win by the Titans. On the foot of Gary Anderson. But these kickers stink. They're awful. We're also getting word. We talked to Willie in the second hour in Anaheim. Tonight it's the Predators and the Ducks. And I said, did that wind in Dallas come at a cost? Because Victor Arvidsson, he got the slashing call at the end of the game. But we all saw him bracing for the fall forward into the boards, and he immediately got up and pulled off his glove, started shaking his hand. He didn't know if it's his hand, his wrist, what was going on. He skated right over the bench, right down the tunnel, and, of course, did not return. Well, today the Predators have put him on injured reserve.
That's rough because he had just gotten off injured reserve to play in that game.
Yes,
Saturday afternoon. Obviously, the top line has meant a lot to the Predators so far this season. The good news is when he was on injured reserve, everyone else sort of got going for them, Darren. And so now they need that to continue. They need Kevin Fiala to step up. They need Craig Smith and Kyle Turris and Ryan Hartman, who's played great as of late. They need those guys to continue to play that way because who knows, it may be a little while longer before we see number 33 back out there.
And there has been no word on Callie Armkirk, who did not, you know, after warmups, they're like, Freddie Gaudreau, we need you to get out there.
Get in there.
You're going to center that fourth line.
Put those pads on.
Because Callie Armkirk is out. No word on him right now. So that kind of threw us for a loop on Saturday afternoon.
I mean, injuries are part of it in 82 games, and this start for the Predators has been absolutely tremendous. Now they've got a bit of a difficult stretch here, and I know you're concerned about the game tonight in Anaheim because the Ducks' backs are a bit against the wall. It's a game where these two teams obviously know and do not like each other, so you know you're going to get their best shot. I'm concerned about the second half of a back-to-back tomorrow night in San Jose. It's a Sharks team that already beat you here early on in the season. Very, very good team. And the Southern California, Northern California back-to-back, not as polite as some back-to-backs are. So,
which usually,
how do they bounce back?
You know how this works? Because I've already seen Minnesota just do it. And who else just did it? Usually, the back-to-backs in Southern California are in Southern California.
Sure.
It's usually you hit one night at Staples Center, the next night the Honda Center, or vice versa. But like you said, this is Southern California to Northern California, not your typical back-to-backs in California. Usually it's a little bit more schedule-friendly where you're doing just the quick little jaunt from L.A. to Anaheim. Well, that's not the case with the Predators. I do think this is the game that could be the hiccup on this road streak of 8 in a row. I understand the Sharks are really good. I get that. It's not because I don't believe the Sharks are a better team than the Ducks. The Predators have terrible history in the Shark Tank. I get all that. They're really good here against the Sharks. They're not good there. I understand all that. But I do think maybe the 5.5-minute collapse, the 3 goals here, maybe would serve a little bit of a motivation for them. Sure. To remember, by the way, we've only had 3 hiccups this year, and that was one of them. And it happened in a span of just over 5 minutes in the third period.
Shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Chance to erase it to some degree. Yeah. I get all that. I just think these 2 games, the circumstances, the injuries now, I think it's a test for this team, which up to this point of the season really hasn't faced much for adversity. They've just been so good that it's just sort of been a full-on sprint out of the gates for them. Here now you've got some adversity to deal with on the road and back-to-back tough places to play because of the opponents and how they're going to play you. I think these 2 games, I don't know how much they tell us about the Preds, but I think it's going to be a difficult challenge to emerge still perfect on the road from both of them.
What I don't like about tonight is what, you know, the Ducks, you know, what they do. And they're going to try to muddy the water up, and they're going to try to get the Predators in the box, and they're going to try to get them off their game. And they're pretty good at doing that, especially one Ryan freaking Kessler, okay?
Yeah.
So and they're, you know, big physical team. They're going to try to push you around. So they're just going to try to do everything to get you off your game. And that's – they're not – they've gotten off to a really rough start. But I just – I don't – you know what you're getting with the Ducks and that part of it. And – you had this nice come-from-behind victory, right, where you played catch-up all day on Saturday, and you came out with the overtime win against the Stars. So then you have to turn around and bounce back from going to Dallas to Southern California and turn around and try to recreate that magic tonight.
By the way, Willie checks in. Besides Arvi on IR with the upper body injury that we mentioned, he says Callie Yarncroke will skate today in morning skate. So –
they are on the ice right now.
Perhaps a good sign for the Predators. Of course, you mentioned that he took part in warm-ups the other day and then wasn't able to go ultimately, but it doesn't seem like his is a very serious injury if he's going to take part in morning skate again today.
They are hitting the ice right now at the Honda Center, so we ask, we shall receive, right? Kelly Yarncroke, there you go, courtesy of Willie, is going to skate this morning, so that's a good sign that maybe indeed he will suit up and play tonight against the Ducks. When we come back, who said that? We always look forward to that every week. Right now, I want to talk to anybody out there that may be dealing with some numbness or tingling in your arms, your legs, your hands, or your feet. I've got, if this is going on with you and you're wondering what's going on, I've got the folks you need to go see. The board-certified surgeons at the Vein Center. They can help you. These folks specialize in comprehensive vein health, not just cosmetic treatments. So if you've got some leg cramping or some weakness or some cold limbs or limbs changing color, well, these are the folks, because their surgeons have over 100 years of combined vein expertise. And when you go there, you're going to see a doctor. You will sit down with a doctor and have them diagnose your problem, whether it's Dr. Bunnell or Dr. Kaiser, Dr. Snyder, Dr. Edwards, Dr. Kim, or Dr. Lee, to name a few. You are going to see a doctor, and they've got 3 locations. 3 convenient locations, Bell Mead, Cool Springs, and Mount Juliet here in Middle Tennessee. And they are Middle Tennessee's most established vein treatment practice. If something like this has been going on, if your legs just hurt at the end of the day and you're trying to chalk it up as, well, I'm on my feet a lot or I'm getting older, don't do that. Go make an appointment and go see a doctor at the Vein Center. 615-269-9007. That's 269-9007. You can always check out their website, veinreliever.com. More news coming from Anaheim. While we told you Callie Yarncroke will participate in morning skate versus the Ducks, it does not look like, if you look at the rushes, the line rushes, that he will play tonight.
Apparently not participating all that much.
Yes. So there you go. He was not a part of any of the combinations right now. The combinations looked like Freddie Gaudreau would be back in there, Ronaldo back in there. Looked like maybe Potato. That's been interesting, kind of like they usually get two or three starts. Potato, it was Irwin before that. Ham Hughes is close to coming back. So how will that – really the only mainstay has been Yannick Weber, who did have a nice goal on Saturday. So we'll see how all that plays out. Okay, it's time to play Who Said That? Steve and I have no clue what Julian is going to play behind the glass. This is a press conference that took place over the weekend, and we're going to try to guess who in the heck just said that.
No. Warm-up's not really, but when I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
Oh, I think I've got this one.
I do as well.
That would be what took place. In fact, we're watching NFL Game Day. The Browns beating up on the Falcons yesterday. I believe that was Baker Mayfield.
It was. It could have been Nick Chubb, however.
Nick Chubb.
Because he was dangerous.
As I told you on during the break, it was good to start Nick Chubb and Aaron Jones as your starting running backs in fantasy football yesterday.
Mm. Not bad.
Not a bad combo. Yeah, good win for Greg Williams. And the Cleveland Browns.
I thought you were going to say good win for your fantasy team.
And the Falcons, 4-5. Doesn't look like they're going anywhere this year. They've had a lot of injuries. A lot.
They have. It's interesting because some people think Dan Quinn's great. Records haven't really been there the last couple years off the Super Bowl.
Yeah. It does seem like after the Super Bowl collapse that they've been kind of average since then. Okay. Who said that?
All the players seem on board with going for the win, going for two.
Well, I'm the only guy that matters on that. I don't give what they think. They pay me to do that, and that way y'all can criticize me. But we had made the decision, gosh, probably two drives before. I'm not trying to belittle you. I'm just saying, if we let all them make decisions, hell, we'd be out there till the game was over.
We're both shaking our heads. By the way, did he say, I don't give a rat's? Is that what he said? Beep-boop.
I don't know, but later he said, I'm a man. I went for two.
Yeah. So he has given us all kinds of drops over the years. That was clearly the mullet.
Yeah.
The mullet, by the way, they had every chance to beat Oklahoma. And by the way, guess what the difference was? Anybody watch the game? What was the difference?
Other than the two-point conversion?
A miss, extra point.
Yeah, which is – part of the reason probably why he went for it anyway.
Right.
Is because he didn't have a whole lot of faith in either his holder or his kicker after what he'd seen. But, man, God bless Mike Gundy. He made my life so great when I covered Oklahoma sports, and he still makes me laugh.
He sounds like he smokes three packs of cigarettes a day. Can you start that off again? Listen to him. No, it's gone. All right.
I don't care. What y'all think? Huh?
Fantastic.
Oklahoma State.
Just fantastic.
Oh, so close. But by the way, they were a 3-touchdown underdog to Oklahoma, which I thought. But, man, that's excessive for that game.
Too high. Bedlam's always wild. I was 62-52 a year ago. You know there's going to be points put up, and it's going to be tight.
Okay. Who said
that? I don't know. I think that's for you guys to decide. But for me, I knew that I can play in this league. And so to get back out there after 2 years, it was, again, just like – I don't want to be cliche by saying it was like riding a bike, but I mean, I've done this for years, and I feel like was made to play football, and tonight was just an example of just going out there and doing what I was made to do.
I'm guessing. I think I know it. I'm guessing. Do you?
I 100% know.
Is this the blowout in East Rutherford?
It is.
So that was Matt Barkley?
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, Pete Weber's very happy today.
A lot of people in upstate New York are. Downstate, not so much.
Ironically, after I said this, I don't know if he was listening in Anaheim, but I said, and they did the little extra. Also, I know that I think Todd Bowles is going to get shown the door. The headlines for the New York Post is, embarrassing loss to brutal Bills makes it clear Todd must go. And then it's got a picture of Todd Bowles, and it says, Bowles Buster.
I think the other New York paper had fireable offense as their headline.
They got shredded at home.
It was awful.
To the Bills and Matt Barkley, who was on the street a week prior.
Yeah. He says it's,
did he say 2 years?
Basically 2 years. And he said, I don't want to say it's just like riding a bike, but getting back out there and doing what I do. Other than maybe that fourth quarter against the Titans a couple years ago in Chicago, I never saw Matt Barkley do that before. If I had, he wouldn't have been on the shelf for almost 2 years.
Yeah. By the way, the other little tiny headline after, because Todd Bowles takes up the whole headline of the New York Post. This is what Pete Weber sent me. It says, and clock ticking on Melo in Houston. Well, duh. Imagine that. The Rockets can't play defense.
Nope.
And by the way, Carmelo looks old and slow. Who said that?
Man, I'm not listening. Again, T-Bowles is not the problem. I'm going to ride with T-Bowles to the end. It doesn't matter. I don't care what the fans say. It's T-Bowles, man. I'm going to support my coach to pick it there.
Do you think that your players have done enough for him to keep his job?
I feel we've came out and we've executed. But at the same time, man, we got to execute our job. We're on the field. The coach is not on the field. I'm sorry. The coach is not on the field. We got to execute our job. So.
Now, who was it on defense that said after the game, we basically laid down? Was that who it was? Who's on defense? I'm drawing blanks. Is it the guy from LSU?
Jamal Adams?
Was that? That was Jamal Adams?
Yeah, Jamal Adams.
Okay. He's, I think he was the one who said.
He's easily the most outspoken guy on that defense.
We laid down. Like, are you saying you quit? Did you, what?
I didn't see that. I don't know if he would have said that, though.
Well,
he had some words a couple weeks ago, too, about the Jets continuously losing.
Yeah. And Jamal Adams is probably the one guy on that defense who can speak up because he's not going anywhere for a while. But.
Whew. Oh, it was Morris Claiborne. That's who said it. Okay. Morris Claiborne.
He's still in the league?
Yeah. He said the Jets laid down on Sunday. Morris Claiborne. All right, we're rolling.
I won't disagree.
Who said that?
It hurts. This hurts. It hurts everybody. And we gotta move. We gotta get better and coach better, play better. And the focus has got to come down to getting prepared better and ready to play the next football game.
That one doesn't have any real.
I know. There's nothing that stands out. It sounds like about 95% of
basically everyone who lost.
It hurts. This hurts. It hurts everybody. And we gotta move. We gotta get better and coach better, play better. And the focus has got to come down to getting prepared better and ready to play the next football game.
When he talks about getting guys prepared. Might he have made a decision today to get rid of his defensive coordinator off of yesterday's performance?
Oh, that would be Marvin Lewis.
Correct.
Yeah. When you give up 52 at home, usually somebody's head has to roll.
That head would be Anthony Lynn's. He's out as defensive coordinator.
That's not Anthony.
I'm sorry. No. It's
No.
You're right.
Anthony Lynn is the head coach.
I was
going to
say, did
the
coach literally just get fired? Who said that?
I'm getting the wrong coach there, but. He did fire his defensive coordinator.
I was like, wow, another coach shown the door today.
Not Anthony Lynn, though. Bengals defensive coordinator, Terrell Austin. Thank you. Sorry.
Yeah, it's right there. Everybody knew. Not exactly a household name. do we have any more?
That's it.
Wow, how about that? That's called boom, roasted.
I think these were pretty good this week. The last two were increasingly challenging.
Oh, okay.
Because there weren't a lot. Good. Weren't a lot there. But yeah, I liked it.
All right, we'll come back and wrap up Monday's edition of Darren and Donick next. We brought it up last week. We kept saying, okay. Let's play the game. In fact, we even had our own draft board. Who gets fired? And I believe, let's go back and look. If I can pull out of my notes here, Willie and I drafted. I believe Bobby Petrino was my first round pick.
Smart pick.
Mm-hmm. And indeed, he was shown the door of the weekend because the whole point was this is the time of year when this stuff starts happening, right?
Well, today is the 1-year anniversary of Butch Jones.
Is it really? Today is the 1 year, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Will he ever get back in as a head coach?
Well, what was it, a week or so ago? We heard that he was trying to float his name out about the Maryland job.
Yeah. He can float his name out all he wants.
I don't know. He's a really interesting case to me because it's not like he never had any success. He was a good coach at Central Michigan. He had success at Cincinnati, and he won 9 games in back-to-back years at Tennessee when he inherited a disaster from Derek Dooley. So it's not like Butch Jones never had any success anywhere. He's actually done okay at 3 different spots, but the way it ended at Tennessee was just weird. He lost complete control. He didn't handle himself well. And so I don't know. I don't know if you're an athletic director or a president of a school out there, what you would have to think he can bring to counteract the end of that. What do you think?
I think if he wants to go the Lane Kiffin route or Butch Davis route and take one of the mid-major jobs, yeah, I think a mid-major will be, you know, East Carolina, Southern Miss, you know, those type of – one of the schools up in Michigan.
Yeah, go back to a MAC school.
Yeah, MAC school. I could see that, sure. And then you'd have to work his way, cycle through again. I don't know if he'll ever have a big boy job again.
I don't know if he knows this. He should, though. He's not cut out for one of those jobs.
No, he's not.
And it's not necessarily because he's not a good enough coach, although you maybe can argue that. It's just he took everything personal. Every criticism was about him. Every statement about the program was an indictment. And he just spent all his time being defensive. And when you're at Tennessee, guess what? Criticism comes with the job. That's why you get the paycheck that also comes with the job. And you've got to just let it roll off of you and go. And that's one thing I'll say about Jeremy Pruitt to this point is I think he's taking criticism from a lot of different corners over his media policy with guys, over how he's handled the media, over, you know, just some of the things he's done around his practice schedule and the quarterback situation early on. I think he's taken criticism, but you know what? He's at least been strong-willed enough to say, this is my plan and I'm sticking to it and we're going to just go. And guess what? His team's gotten better and better as the year's gone along. And here they are with a chance to get to a bowl game in his first season with 1 win in the final 2 games. I think that's a credit to a coach who, whether you agree with the plan or not, he had a plan, and he stuck with it from day one, now into November.
You're so right. I mean, you have to be able to handle that stuff, and you have to be a duck. You do. You have to be a duck at times, and you have to evolve. And I don't think he evolved. I think it got worse. And I feel like I don't know if he was getting advice or just wasn't listening to the advice, but I kept saying, why can't anybody in his camp tell him, coach, you cannot do this, or coach, you cannot say that? And maybe that was happening. And maybe he was just disregarding it. As we found out in Columbus, people were trying to help out Urban Meyer, but it was very clear that he was, you know, the reports coming out that he wasn't willing to listen to anybody and how to handle those situations, Big Ten media days and the other press conferences. So maybe that was in play, but, you know, a prime example is here. I think Mike Vrabel has gotten a whole lot better. Like, I think he has evolved. I think he's changed. I think he's laxed a little bit. I just think, you know, it was the very beginning. That's what I kept saying with him. Like, coach, you're in charge. Everybody gets it. You don't need to show everybody that you're in charge. Okay. We get it. You're the head coach.
Yep.
And I think he was so hell-bent on right at the beginning of telling everybody, these are my rules and these are my policies and you will do things this way, and just caught up in all that game. And it's like, we get it. Okay, you're in charge. You're the head coach of an NFL team. You don't need to focus all your energy on signs and all this other useless stuff.
Right.
You know, and sometimes coaches get caught up in that, and it's a waste of time. And I think he's really – I think he's handled this and changed for the better, way better.
I totally agree. You and I had the conversation. I said, when you worry about all the things like signs in your media room and where the interviewers stand when you're talking, when you worry about that stuff and that consumes you, are you worried about all the little things that you have to do to be successful week in and week out in the National Football League? He's proven me wrong in that. because I think the way he prepares this team and he's got these coaches on board, they continually show that they're ready to go through all the adversity early on in the season and then in a game like Sunday where they outcoach Bill Belichick and that New England staff. Now he has another hurdle here, though. And I think he knew this because we talked about right after the Philly win, which was a huge win, and they were 3-1, and people were starting to pat them on the back. You had a trap game in Buffalo where it was like, okay, this is a game they need to go take care of business. And he knew it, but you know what? He couldn't solve it. Even with the way he game planned for that week and tried to talk about it, the Titans still went and laid an egg. Here is a similar situation, only the Colts are better. You have a huge win. People are going to talk about you for 2 or 3 days this week about what a great performance. Look out for the Titans in the AFC South. Now you have back-to-back division games on the road, starting with an Indy team that you've never beaten with Andrew Luck at the helm. Can he get this team back focused to play as well as they've played in the last two games when people were counting them out, now when people are patting them on the back?
Yeah, and he probably cringed at his players saying, why is anybody talking about us? Because that's something he never experienced in other trips, especially as a player in his time in New England. They didn't talk about, why is anybody talking about us? And that was probably why he said it right away in going into the Buffalo game, because that was the game, Taylor Wan and others, you know, why is anybody talking about us? Right.
Yeah. Notice no one said that yesterday. So maybe the message got through.
Yeah. That'll do it for our Monday edition of Darren and Donnie. Good stuff. Hopefully, Steve, we won't have any rain tomorrow.
Sunny day.
But we'll have tons to discuss. Everybody have a great rest of your day. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. See you then.